Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Back with you on The Takeaway, I'm Tanzina Vega, and spring has officially sprung. And if you're anything like me, you've been spending a lot more time just noticing things. Like the songs of sparrows outside your apartment window, or the purple crocuses bursting into bloom in a nearby park, or even asteroids shooting across the night sky. But did you know those kinds of observations could actually be helpful to scientists? In fact, during the pandemic, as many of us have been forced to stay close to home, we've seen a growing number of people participating in something called citizen or community science. That's when people like you and me voluntarily collect data out in the world or in our own backyards to help professional scientists study everything from migratory patterns of butterflies to neighborhood air quality. For more on this, I'm joined by Katie Prudick, an assistant professor of citizen and data science at the University of Arizona. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
First of all, there is a citizen and data science professorship at the University of Arizona. I just heard about citizen science. How long has this been around?
Oh, well, sort of in the mainstream U.S. culture, I would say probably 10 years is when it really started going. And there's been a lot of organizations. We have a professional society. And that's been really sort of facilitated by smartphones and technology, I would say. But if we go back, you know, through time and across cultures, then, you know, probably my favorite data set that I always like to point out to people is one about cherry blossoms that goes back to 800 AD. I think it was in the news lately about the Kyoto cherry blossoms being earlier this year than they have been since like the 1200s.
So folks, average non-scientist folks who are interested in what's happening around them, particularly now, I mean, I was talking to our team about this story yesterday and saying how I'm noticing nature a lot more closely this year because of the pandemic. Are you seeing more people involved in this type of citizen scientist community because of the pandemic?
Well, I do want to say that citizen science incorporates a lot of different things beyond just nature and biodiversity. It includes astronomy. It even includes public health and public utilities and those sorts of things. But if we focus just in on the nature part of it, I published a paper recently with a colleague, Teresa Crimmins, and we found that urban areas had an uptick in community or citizen science participation, but people weren't traveling as much to rural areas to watch birds or butterflies or plants.
So what are some examples of what we're seeing today? What kind of projects are people doing? And then how are the pros finding out about these projects?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, I mean, the projects are quite varied. Think of citizen science as you would any other scientific technique that goes across disciplines. It's a way to mobilize and organize people who are interested in what you do to collect larger amounts of data over more space and time, or to, you know, really burrow in a certain location and get really in-depth data. So it's just, you know, sort of collecting an army of people to help you out, right? And so what have the pros been learning? Depends on the question, of course, but certainly in the nature world, we've been learning a lot about migration, about species range changes, about changes in phenology as they relate to climate change, and phenology is seasonality. So right now, what you would see is changes in bloom time. So when blossoms of those crocuses are coming out, or when grass is starting, or even when those song sparrows start to sing at you at those early hours of the morning.
How has the pandemic disrupted the ability of professional scientists to collect their data, given the lockdowns and quarantines and travel restrictions we've seen?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially in the beginning, there was a huge sort of disruption to data collection. I know many of my colleagues' labs were shut down or limited to one person in the lab at a time. I think now with masking and vaccines and those sorts of things, protocols have been established where we've ramped up our data collection again, which is great, and data analysis. But you know, it is really important to have that engagement with citizen science. And I think it's important for a few reasons. One is the scale that of the data you can collect. Another is the perspectives that community scientists bring to the table. I think as a professional, I've learned a tremendous amount from other people who have been out in the field observing and so excited to share what they saw. And that gives me not just inspiration, but also a different perspective of how to approach my work.
Are the citizen scientists we're talking about folks that are posting, say, photos of or sounds of the birds that they're listening to and on social media, and that's how scientists, the professionals, are learning about this? Or are there more formal channels for citizen scientists to sort of get their data, if you will, in the hands of the professional scientists?
Yes, certainly we can definitely use Flickr or some sort of repository like that to sort of scrub data off. But I prefer the sort of more specialized web platforms that you alluded to. Certainly the most popular one right now, I would say, is eBird for those birders out there. But there's also other ones like iNaturalist, which is agnostic in terms of the biology. It's any species, really. And then I developed a web platform with colleagues that's called eButterflies, focusing on butterflies. And then there's also a phenology platform called Nature's Notebook, run through the National Phenology Network.
During the pandemic, there has been an increase in anti-science movements here in the United States. What does the community science mean for trust in science overall?
I think it provides a space where we can share what we enjoy and share what we all discover, regardless of your political leanings or your background or your location spatially. I think what I've really enjoyed about that is that once you have a shared interest, then it's easier to start having conversations and sort of understand people who come from different viewpoints.
And how far do you see, are there any new emerging trends of science that citizen scientists may have pointed out for you all?
Oh, yeah. So there's been some really great discoveries about migration, certainly species range expansions or contractions related to climate change. We just published a paper on a butterfly that folks might know out east, the eastern giant swallowtail. It seems to be moving north at the fastest rate of any known animal. So that's kind of fun. Now, folks have a lot of opportunities to find their place in citizen science. I would recommend going to SciStarter, SciStarter.org, to look for different projects that are available to them. And it's really just about finding a community that speaks to you and a process that's enjoyable for you to go out and explore the world.
Katie Prudick is an assistant professor of citizen and data science at the University of Arizona. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is Chris from Richmond, California. I'm an outdoor photographer and have been using the iNaturalist app for years. It helps me sound smart when I can identify birds and other critters, and it benefits the local scientific community as well. So it's win-win.
Hey there. This is Lucia from Ashland, Wisconsin. And I'm just letting you know about the Go Sky Watch and the Go ISS Watch apps are very, very good for observing the International Space Station and stars and planets. Wonderful to use, very easy, and so much fun.
My name is Mike from Worcester, Massachusetts. And I absolutely use my bird identification app when I take my walk in the woods each morning. It's always fun to start to figure out who is joining me today and yesterday, and who may be there tomorrow. It's a good thing to do during these times that we are living in, for sure. The birds seem to know what's important, and I enjoy what I might be learning from them.
Hi, my name is Julia Hansling. I'm in Portland, Oregon. And in terms of science apps, the main ones that I use are both of Starwalk and Skywalk, which are fabulous apps for identifying constellations and planetary functions. And I also use the Garden Answers and Plantit for plant identification. They're excellent. So I think it's a real exciting aspect of using technology for expanding our world. Thank you.